For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Fastening the safety belts. Here we go. We're going to take periodic questions, quick review of the parsha, then we're going to get into it. But I'm going to open up with a quick, kind of like a story, because this parsha opens up with exile. Jacob goes into exile. He flees from his brother. And he goes and institutes the evening service. Each one of the patriarchs instituted one of the prayer service. Avram, the morning service, Shacharis, Yitzchak, the afternoon, Mincha, and Yaakov Mariv, the night, in the darkness, in the confusion, right, fleeing from your brother who's trying to kill you, to Lavan. Lavan is going to be his future father-in-law, a con artist, right? So the idea is, there's a lot of ideas here, but at that time when everything looks dark, right, and you don't see God's face, and you don't feel close to God, right, a person has to know that that's a time that you have to strengthen yourself, and you have to pray. That's what the Mariv service is, in the evening. So there's certain times in our lives when, you know, you don't feel like it, and it seems confusion and darkness. So the story is with the Kotzke Rebbe. One of his Hasidim once came up to him and said, Rebbe, ich cannot daven, ich cannot learn, and my heart's broken. He says, my heart's broken. I don't know how to daven like I should. I can't learn like I should. You know, what hope is there for me? So the Rebbe said, how do you know that's not what Hashem wants from you, is just that broken heart? And about that it was said, there's nothing more whole than a broken heart. So the idea is, if you even a kvetch, even aside, during these times of darkness, when you feel you can't pray, you can't do anything, any little thing you do then is very important, even a broken heart. The parsha opens up with this. Yaakov has this mystical dream, a ladder going from the ground into the heavens, right? And angels going up and down, right? Then he gets to Laban's house. He sees his destined mate, what we call the Sheret. Rachel, right? We see his physical strength, not like we always thought. He takes off a rock, a boulder from a well, which normally it took all the shepherds to gather there to do this. Yaakov single-handedly does this when he sees Rachel. The divine spirit rested on him, similar to incidents we read about Samson, Shimshon. Says the divine spirit rested on him and he did amazing physical acts. He sees Rachel, he does this physical act, he kisses her, and he cries as he sees the destiny of Israel. You know, here's the mother, the mama, you know, the father and the mama of all of Israel, and he sees the future and the exiles and everything. And it's a very Jewish thing. Kissing, joy, and crying at the same time. Okay, after this incident, he meets his father-in-law, the arch-con artist of all time, switches wages, switches wives on him, and he ends up getting Leah instead of Rachel, and then eventually gets Rachel. And eventually, 11 of the 12 tribes are born in this Torah portion, and Dinah. Okay, this is described about the matriarchs being barren. Okay? We have an incident with Dudaim, this incident with some sort of herb, some sort of flowers that evidently had properties to make barren women pregnant. Okay? And that's described here. We really don't know much about that. Very mystical thing. After this incident, okay, and we have 11 tribes mentioned, we have Dinah, and that about this time, Laban starts getting very jealous of the rich Jew. Despite that he tried to trick Yaakov every which way, God blesses Yaakov. He becomes very wealthy. Lavan and his sons get very jealous. and it becomes dangerous for Yaakov to stay there any longer. He must flee by orders of Hashem. Hashem appears to him and tells him to flee. He gathers his wives. He tells them the story. And they all go. Okay? And they leave and they're coming back to Israel. And then another mystical thing happens as they meet another camp. Their camp meets another camp. A heavenly camp. A camp of angels. And we're going to see, we'll talk about that. And that's how the Parsha ends. And what's going to happen starting next week, he's going to meet Esav after not seeing him for 36 years. Okay, we'll stop for a second. Let's go back to the beginning of the Parsha. Yaakov goes, follow along with me, guys. Chapter 28, verse 10. Vayetze Yaakov mebe'er shava vayelech harana. He goes from Be'er Sheva, Israel, and he goes to this place, Haran. Now, again, the Hebrew language is so beautiful because, you know, this just sounds in English like he went from one city to another. But in Hebrew, Be'er Sheva means the well of satisfaction, satiation. And he goes to a place called Harana. That's from the word Haran, which means anger. So mystically, you know, there's many different layers to the Torah, many different levels. And one of the more esoteric levels of the Torah, this can be read, Yaakov, that's us. You know that, don't you know? We're called Yaakov throughout the prophets. Or Yisrael, which is Yaakov's other name. He's going to get a name change next week. We are B'nai Yisrael. Our land is Eretz Yisrael, right? So, thanks. Okay, so Yaakov, us, the Jew, leaves from a place of satisfaction, a place of ultimate satiation, underneath the throne of God's glory. That's where our souls come from. And we have to go, the ultimate Lech Lecha, we have to go to a place of anger, this world. A place of confusion, darkness, where we don't see everything clearly. We think the physicality is the reality. That's how lost we are. Okay? So that's what it means. That's the soul's journey from a well of satisfaction in heaven, near the God's presence, to a place of anger, earth. Okay? That's one insight. Okay, so Yaakov, on a physical level, gets to this place. Vayivka b'makom, he arrives there. Makom, this is the place, by the way. You know what place this is? That's right. This is the future site of the Holy Temple. Okay? And, as a matter of fact, Yaakov sleeps there, and he gets the rocks of the place. And, by the way, he took 12 rocks, and this was the rocks where his tati, Yitzchak, was bound. The Akedah Yitzchak took place here, the binding of Isaac. And these were those same rocks. Okay? Interesting. The rocks fought. Which one would have the right? I don't know what this means exactly, but they fought. Which one would have the right to be one of them used as a pillow for his head? So this is significant in that every inanimate object, every animal, plant, everything craves its spiritual spark, its godly spark craves to be used by a human, especially a Jew. It gets elevated that way. It's the greatest thing that can happen to it. And by the way, our whole functioning on earth is to elevate the physical. And from this rock, what does Yaakov say? As a matter of fact, he takes this rock, and after he has this prophetic dream of the ladder, he says he takes the rock. This is chapter 28, verse 18. Vayikach es ha'evan, he takes the rock, and he makes it into an altar. Right? From a rock, you can make an altar. You hear the significance? From an inanimate object, you can make something of the highest spirituality. And that's what it means. The ladder was on the ground. That's what it says, the feet of the ladder on the ground, and the head of the ladder was in the heavens. The connection between the physical and the spiritual. Here on earth, the foot of the ladder, earthly things, they can go, we can raise them up into the heavens. We can raise them and make them spiritual. Hang on. So, he has this dream, right, of this angels up and down the ladder. We mentioned four angels, by the way. This dream, says Or Chaim, I believe it's Or Chaim, this is equivalent to Avraham's prophetic vision called the Bris Ben HaBasarim, the covenant of the pieces, seeing the four exiles. These four angels each represented an exile. And Yaakov saw one angel go up 70 steps on the ladder and come down. Oh, that was an exile 70 years. Then he saw another one go up so many years. Another one, the last one, Edom, our exile. He saw the angel going up, but he didn't see the angel coming down, and he got scared. He says, is there ever going to be an end to this exile? Because this is the longest one. So we have this reoccurring theme over and over again, the four exiles from Bereshit. Remember those four words? Right? The Ruach Elohim, the Spirit of God, is over the void, the null of the deep of the earth, the darkness of the earth, represents the four exiles. Repeated with Avram. It's repeated here over and over again. The four exiles. That's our history. So what happens? Yaakov wakes up. He's promised that the whole land of Israel will be ours. And then Hashem gives him a promise. I'm going to watch over you. I'm going to bring you back in safely. Yaakov gets up and he says, Yes, Hashem, Mamakom Azeh, there's God. This is a godly place. I didn't know. Right? And he says, Ma Noira Mamakom Azeh, how awesome is this place? This is the future place of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Ein Zeh Ki'im Beis Elokim. This is the house of God. This is going to be the holy temple. The Zeh Shar HaShemayim, the gate to heaven. All prayers we say everywhere in the world, somehow they're channeled through here, and this is the exit towards the next world. This is the gate to heaven. All prayers, everything go through this gate to the next sphere. That is the Beis HaMikdash. And another thing he was saying here, and then I'm going to take questions. He says, I didn't know Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh. I didn't know that God could be in this place. Yaakov is outside the land of Israel. I don't know how this works, but mystically, God uprooted the site of the Beis HaMikdash of the Holy Temple and brought it to Yaakov. Symbolically, what it's saying is, when Yaakov says, I didn't know God could be in this place, when there's an exile and there's no Holy Temple, how can God be outside of Israel, outside of the Beis HaMikdash, where His divine presence rests? God gives him a promise. You're going to have a Mikdash Ma'at, a miniature sanctuary. When the destruction of the temple happens, your synagogues, your houses of study, will be considered a miniature holy temple. And that's what Yaakov says. I didn't know God could be in this place outside of Israel. Yes, we'll take a little bit of the holy temple with us in every exile, the synagogues and the places that we learn Torah. We'll stop and take questions. Here's things you've got to say. Rachel's jealous of her sister. Yaakov looks like a Chalila. He wants to come to his wife immediately. It's ridiculous. He's a very holy people. Rachel's jealousy of her sister, we're going to see, was one of the holiest thoughts. And what Leah, the love between Rachel and Leah, back and forth, the self-sacrificing is amazing. And Yaakov is what you're going to see everything in a different light here. This is a good question. I don't know if I have an answer. And that's when to get spiritually attuned. But the question's better than the answer. Okay, last question for letting me know that I'm not smart enough. Okay, so let's...
God will be with me.
Very nice. If God will be with me, so that's where we get the expression of Yirtzeh Hashem, with God's help. God's, very nice. Very, very nice. All right. You guys are on the ball here. Let's go and talk a little about this whole union of Yaakov and Rachel when he meets her. Basically, we're going to ask her, she left here, but Debbie had a question. Why did Yaakov kiss Rachel, and why did he cry? I mean, there are two good questions there. So, first of all, we have to understand the whole sequence of events here. Number one, there was two daughters, Rachel and Leah. Rivka's brother. This is Rivka's brother, had two daughters. Laban had two daughters. Okay? Rivka had two sons, Yaakov and Esau. So everybody said, well, the older will marry the older, and the youngest will marry the younger, which means Leah would be stuck with Esau, right? And Yaakov would marry Rachel. So it says, it describes Leah right off the bat. It says the eyes of Leah were weak, it says, and it says they're weak from crying. She was always crying that she would not fall into the lot of Esau. Okay? She was the destined mate of Esau. So I show you the unbelievable power of tefillah, of prayer. She was supposed to marry Esau, and her prayer had such a power. Not only did it overturn the decree, but she was first to marry Yaakov. She was buried in Machpelah with him. Rachel did not get to have that privilege. The majority of the tribes were born from her, including Levi and Yehuda, which, you know, where the kings come from and the priesthood. So that's the power of what a prayer can do. So in the meantime, Rachel, though, interesting enough, is always considered Mama Rachel, we call her. She is considered the mother of Israel. She gave birth to two tribes, Yosef and Benjamin, but she is still considered the mother. She's the mainstay of the home. Yaakov always considers her the main wife. Later in the story of Ruth, right, Rus, they'll even give a blessing, you know, to Naomi and Rus, and they'll mention Rachel, and that's from Yehuda. That these people are from Yehuda, that is the descendant of Leah, and even they will mention Rachel's name first. Everybody recognized Rachel was the mama of Yisrael. I have a theory on it, but I don't know if it holds any water because I hadn't seen any commentaries. But you know how, like, let's say Moshe Rabbeinu gets credit for all the Torah we learn, right? Right? Because he in turn taught Torah, and those rabbis taught Torah all the way down to us. So really, you know, he's the rabbi of all Israel. He gets credit for every Torah we learn. What happened here was, underneath the wedding canopy, they suspected, Yaakov and Rachel suspected that Laban would try to trick Yaakov. Why? Because Laban recognized he would be blessed with wealth as long as Yaakov was with him. And that's what happened. When Yaakov started shepherding for him, Laban was very poor before, now he got very wealthy. So he wanted to keep the golden goose at all cost, right? So he switched wives and then made a deal that he has to work another 7 years, right, to get Rachel. So they suspected the switch, so Yaakov gave Rachel certain signs, so I'll know it's you, because they wore a veil. Give certain signs. So what did Rachel do? The last moment, she saw her sister underneath the chuppah, right? And she knew what was going to happen. Yaakov was going to ask for the signs. She wasn't going to give the signs. She doesn't know the signs. Her sister would suffer such an embarrassment, such a shame. So Rachel gave over the signs to her sister. Okay? Tremendous act of self-sacrifice. Okay? Not only that, but that meant, for all Rachel knew, and this is what they really thought, that's it. She's going to have to marry Esau now. That's it. She just cut herself out of being a matriarch of Israel. I just want you to understand, she just didn't give up someone she loved as a husband. She gave up being a matriarch of Israel and having to marry an Esau. Okay? That was her self-sacrifice. And she's willing to do that because she couldn't cause her sister shame, you know, and embarrassment. So therefore, the theory that maybe you could say the following. If it wasn't for Rachel giving over the signs, Leah would have never become a matriarch. Right? Therefore, any children born subsequently from Leah are really Rachel's children. You understand? Maybe that's why she's called Mama Rachel, because really she's the one that Yaakov worked for. And if it wasn't for act of self-sacrifice, then Leah wouldn't become a matriarch, right? So everything is because of Rachel. And Rachel, mystically, Kabbalistically, there's a lot to talk about here. But this idea when he sees her and he kisses her, and we don't understand what a kiss is. The Zohar mentioned a kiss is like a cleaving of soul to soul. It's an unbelievable intimate bond. And he saw they were two halves, Yaakov and Rachel. He knew what that represented, not just, you know, a guy and a gal here. We're talking about the destiny of Israel and esoterically what they represented. And at the same moment, he saw the future and he saw the exile and he saw that she would be buried on the roadside, desolate and alone, continually in her grave, crying and begging and praying to God, bring my children back to the land of Israel. Let the exile end. And it's her prayers that are heard, by the way. It's an unbelievable medrash. It says Moshe Rabbeinu prayed, and Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov, and all their prayers didn't have the power of Rachel because of this act of self-sacrifice. And I wasn't jealous of my sister. God, how can you be jealous of your children not doing what they're supposed to do, worshiping idols, whatever? Forgive them. And Rachel, Mama Rachel, to this day, that is probably one of the three, you know, sites that we pour our heart out for prayers. You know, the the Western Wall, the Kaisel, Machpelah, and Kever Rachel. Kever Rachel, and if you look, it's beautiful in Jeremiah. And Hashem says to Rachel, Rachel, stop your weeping. You know, I've heard your prayers, and your children will return to their borders. So this is all going on with that kiss and the crying. They're both seeing it. They're both seeing they're not going to be buried together. They're both seeing the union and what's going to be produced from it, the great nation of Israel, and the unraveling of it, the exile. All these things. Tremendous, tremendous stuff here. Okay, move on. Question. Very good point. Rachel married, I mean, she, we know that, okay, Yehuda and Levi are very chashuv, there's no doubt about it, the Kahuna and the Malchus come from them, but Rachel's children, Benjamin, her, the youngest child, was one of four people that never sinned. Okay? Moshe's father, Amram, David's father, Yishai, and David had a son through a great, great woman, Abigail, named Kilab. So David's father and David's son, Amram, Moshe's father, and Benjamin, four people never sinned. And Yosef is a completely cut above everybody else. He fathers two tribes. Ephraim and Manasseh are considered, the firstborn rights go to him, and he fathers two tribes. He's considered like the neck, like the head are the patriarchs, and the body, right, are the tribes of Israel. Well, he's the neck because he's a tribe, and he kind of has a, and he fathers two tribes. No other tribe does that. No other tribe has sons of that caliber, Ephraim and Manasseh. So, yeah, it's true, Rachel has two children, but boy, does she have, you know, Yosef and Benjamin. Hard to compare. Okay, so let's move on. Another reason why Rachel's prayers are heard and why the exile will end because of her prayers is because this act of self-sacrifice says a lot. It's a statement. I'm talking about when she gave over the signs and was willing to fall to the lot of Esau, giving up her husband. It's a sign. Rachel understands that this world, nothing belongs to you. You know, Yaakov met me. We fell in love. We're supposed to marry. But in this world, I even have to give up that. It's complete self-sacrifice, you know, realizing nothing is yours in this world. You know, that makes Rachel's prayers in the future heard where the exile ends. That's some of the idea of it. Okay. Yeah, when you, you know, go up to a used car salesman, you expect that he's going to try to trick you and just lie to you. Why is it when you see a duck, you know it's going to quack? You know, like, you just expect these things. So they suspected. They didn't know for sure it was going to happen, but they suspected. So they prepared for it.
Did Leah have to go along with
it? Let me talk more about Rachel and Leah. When it says, Vatikana Rachel about Achesa, when Rachel was jealous for her sister, you know, boy, right off the bat, the secular world goes nuts on this. But look at the Rashi. It says, beautiful. What was she jealous of? She was jealous of her good deeds. She's so righteous, my sister, that she married it to have children, you know, to get pregnant, and I'm still barren. It must be she's on a higher level than me. Now, that's a jealousy. Like we've said before, every character trait can be used for good or bad, and that's the way jealousy is supposed to be used. You're jealous of the person's good deeds, and you aspire to be like them. So that was it. Now, when these children start being born, we'll watch some of the sacrifice of Leah. You know how Leah cried day and night that she didn't want to fall to the lot of Esau. And she finally gets married. And she's having children. And she gets barren. She has children. She gets barren again. And now let's talk about Dinah. Chapter 30, verse 21. Dinah is from the word Dan, to judge. And they called her that because she passed judgment on herself. What does that mean? At this point in time, right, she had six children, right? And each of the concubines had two each, right? So 10 of the tribes have been born. There's only two left. They all knew this. They all had prophecy. They knew there were going to be 12 tribes. So Leah said, pass judgment on herself. And she said, there's going to be 12 tribes, right? And right now, the four wives that Jacob has, if this child that I'm pregnant with is a male, and it was, by the way, it was a male, it was Yosef, then my sister, my poor sister, will not even have the status of one of the maidservants. Right? She won't. They already have two each. Ten have been born. There's only two left. If this is a male, there's only going to be one tribe left. That means the most my sister could have is one tribe of Israel. So she's amazing. I don't know how this works, but that it switched. It switched some, whatever it is. I don't know how this mystically that Dina was supposed to be born to Rachel and Yosef was supposed to be born to Leah because of Leah's prayer that she didn't want her sister to be, you know, shamed on a lower status than one of the maidservants. They were switched in the wombs. Rachel gives birth to Yosef. She passes judgment on herself, Don, judgment, and she names the child Dina. And she has the girl Dina. Amazing. So you get a whole different perspective. By the way, you don't, all this idea of bringing the maidservants, giving them as wives, all this self-sacrificing just to have a piece of heart and building up the nation of Israel. Now, we're having a class next week, guys. Thanksgiving. Right? Thursday. Be here. But I'll tell you this much. Usually this parsha lands on Thanksgiving. I mean, because I give the class on Thursdays, right? And this Torah portion usually falls during that week. It didn't this week. So I'm going to give you a pre-Thanksgiving drusha. Leah's fourth son. Very interesting. Yehuda. Now, they all had, you know, prophecy, four wives of Jacob, and they figured all things being equal, each one will have three tribes. Leah gives birth to her fourth son, and she says, I've received more than my share. Therefore, I thank you, Hashem, I praise you, and she called the name of the son Yehuda. The word Yehuda in it is the word Todah, thank you. And the word Hoda'ah, Hod, which means to praise. Right? And from her, by the way, will come the ultimate person of praise, David HaMelech, the book of Psalms. Right? Tehillim. Tehillim, praises. So, I got more than my share. Right? Therefore, she named the child Yehuda. Thank you, Hashem. I praise you, Hashem, for giving me more than I deserve. And what are we, and even in English, what are we called? Jews, from the word Judah. Yehudim, from the word Yehuda. We're not called Benjamites, Reubenites, you know, right, Ephraimites, probably because we can't pronounce it. But, right, why are we called Yehudim? Because that Chiddush Yerim says that's what a Yehudi is all about. An attitude a Jew has is, everything I got is more than my share. It's more than I deserve. And I thank you, Hashem, and I praise you. And from the moment we wake up in the morning, we say, Moide Ani, I thank you, Hashem. You want to hear about Thanksgiving? Every day by us is Thanksgiving. Non-stop, 100 blessings a day. We get up in the morning, Moide Ani Lefanecha, I thank you, Hashem, for returning your soul to me. Brachas, 100 blessings every day. Thank you, Hashem, for opening my eyes. Thank you for going to the restroom. Thank you for this food. Thank you for that. That's what a Jew is all about. We take nothing for granted. Everything is an undeserved gift. Everything is more than my share, more than I deserved. That's what a Yehudi is. Always thanking Hashem for everything we got. And that's why we're called that, after Leah's son. That's, take that to Thanksgiving and stuff it in the turkey. over and over again, this idea that Rachel, even though it's amazing, Rachel is always considered the mainstay of the house. Even after she dies, Yaakov makes his main residence with Bilhah, Rachel's maidservant. He doesn't move his main residence to Leah's tent, even then. Because this world, it's all Rachel. Next world, it's Leah. It's Leah and Yisrael. In this world, it's Yaakov and Rachel. It's very mystical Zach. At any rate, you see when he calls his wives out after he gets the dream, he gets the voice from God telling him, leave the country. He calls them out and he addresses Rachel the Leah, the Torah says. The fact that which name goes first is very significant in Judaism. Because Rachel is the mainstay. She's the main one of the house. Now, knowing how much Yaakov loved Rachel, don't you have a question? Why did Yaakov get upset with her? It says, the verse says that he got angry with Yaakov. Yaakov got angry at Rachel. It's something that bothers everybody. And I know Lewis has been at the edge of his chair just waiting to ask this question. Right? Rachel goes up to Yaakov and says, look, I don't have any children. Right? And I'm like a dead person without children. And it says Yaakov got angry at her. Now, first of all, I want you to know, the parsha breaks. There's seven parshas in the Torah. Yaakov's love for Rachel, she happened to be beautiful. That's not why he loved her. Proof, where it says, and Yaakov loved Rachel, right? It's a start of a new parsha. I'll show you what I mean. It describes Rachel's beauty. And Yaakov was fair of form, and I don't know how to translate it, but she was fair to look upon, fair of form. She was very beautiful. Chapter 29, verse 17. That's the last verse in Sheni, in the previous parsha. Rachel's beautiful, basically. Then we stop, we get an Aliyah, Shlishi opens up, and Yaakov loved Rachel. On purpose, it breaks it up there. It doesn't have those two verses together. Because she was pretty, Yaakov loved her. No, that's not why. There was a mystical, spiritual connection there. I just want you to know that. Knowing that, knowing what Rachel was all about, he got mad at her for a number of reasons. First of all, back then they could take Musar a lot better than we could. If we yell at somebody for their good, we fall apart. But back then, Yaakov got mad at Rachel. Number one, as much as Yaakov loved Rachel, he loved God more. And to say, that I'm in place of God, that's what it says. Atachar Elohim Anachi, am I in place of God? You're coming to me? Did I keep fruit from your womb? Right? Pray. You should pray. So he got very angry at Rachel that she put him on that level. The famous story with the Hasidic Rebbe, a lady came in and said, Rebbe, my son's dying. Please pray for him. You're my last hope. I don't know what to do. And she put a little sack of money there, which the Rebbe used to give out to tzedakah, And in the merit of that tzedakah, the prayers would be answered. So he said, lady, I can't help you. And he's known to be a very kind, wonderful, warm person, Rebbe. She says, Rebbe, you didn't hear me. My son's dying. You're my last hope. I don't know what, there's nothing I can do. You gotta pray for him. And she put more money down. She says, lady, take your money and get out of here. She says, Rebbe, have rachmanis. My son's dying. I can't know what else to turn to. Lady, I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to see your face. Take the money and get out of here. She got real mad. She said, fine, I don't need you. I can pray to Hashem myself. Come back. Now I can help you. Okay? Same thing here. Yaakov got mad at Rachel. As much as he loved her, I'm not God. You got to pray on your own. That's number one. Number two, a klala, a curse even of on condition, a curse on condition that doesn't even come through. There's a concept called bris krusa b'shvasayim. A covenant is made with the lips. You never say certain things, especially on that level. If you're a very holy person, you don't go around saying, if I don't have children, I'm like dead. What happened? Rachel, in fact, died in childbirth. You don't go around saying things like that. Jews don't go around saying that. And especially when you're that holy. And Yaakov knew what Rachel was about. For you to say something like that, it could have an effect. And it did. So Rachel, and by the way, it's in the verse. It's beautiful. In the verse, it says that Yaakov got mad. Let me find it. I think it says he got mad for the sake of Rachel. It's worded like this. But Yaakov be-Rachel, which be before a word like be-Rachel. The world's created be-Shvil, for the sake of Rachel. What's Rachel? Israel, Torah. So Yaakov got mad be-Rachel, for the sake of Rachel. He was afraid that what she said would come true. So it's just like your son, your child does something, right? And you get mad at him for his sake, right? He did something that's hazardous to his health. So that's one of the hints. He wasn't mad so much at her as for her sake. Okay? A very important insight there. Okay. Questions on this so far? Very interesting. We're going to have certain reoccurring themes. This idea of Masi Avo Sin Labonim, the actions of our fathers, are a microcosm of what's going to happen in the future, where it says that Yaakov, right, who is the Jewish people, right, he ran away. This is chapter 31, verse 22, right? There's twice that this wording is used, ki barach, because he ran away. The other time, you know where it's used? Ki barach ha'am, because the nation ran away, the nation of Israel, during the Exodus. It's very interesting. The Medrash says, who told Lavan that Yaakov ran away? The same person, right, that told Paro that the Jews ran away, Amalek. Very interesting. So Amalek is the one here, both times, and the Baal Turim says, you want a better hint? Ki barach, those words, because they ran away, numerical value spells the word Amalek.
Was it the same Amalek?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't the Tati. It wasn't the Zaidi, but okay. Okay, at the end of the Torah portion, we're going to bounce around a little bit, so bear with me. At the end of the Torah portion, it's Lavan chases after Yaakov, and he has a dream. God appears to him in a dream and says, don't speak to Yaakov mitayv ad ra, good or bad. What's wrong if he speaks good? Like I was saying, you know, don't do Yaakov any bad. Don't speak good to him either. And obviously, the good of wicked people is bad for us. Like they say to the bee, I don't want your honey, I don't want your sting. Right? So, even what you think is good in your eyes, on your sense of your scale of values, what you think is good, that's bad for a tzaddik. So don't speak to him good or bad. It's very interesting, the ego. You know, so Lavan catches up to Yaakov, and what does he say? Like he can't hold it back. And he says, you know, God appeared to me last night. Where's this? This is chapter. It's toward the end of the parshim, so I can't find it.
31.
Yeah.
And it's somewhere in the.
Right. So he can't hold it back. Like, and he says to him, you know, I had in my power to do you bad if not for God appearing to me last night. Why would he say that? Why would you say that? Why would you say, I was going to do you bad? You know, I had my power to do you bad, but God. Which, you know, you don't like to give away your hand. So, it wasn't to his benefit, but he was so full of conceit and ego, he had to let him know, you know, God appeared to me last night. I had prophecy. Of course, he only had prophecy for the sake of Yaakov. So, it's very interesting. Okay. The end of the parsha, I started to hint to this mystical reunion with another camp. Now, if you look at this, this is chapter 32, chapter 32, verse 3, the very end of the Parsha. And since Cheryl's here, she can tell us about diktuk, Hebrew grammar. Now, how do you say a pair in Hebrew? For example, hands, which is a yad, is one hand. How do you say a pair of hands?
Yadayim,
right? Okay. So, and so forth. I is ayin, an ayim, a foot, regal, raglayim, because it's a pair. It's a matching pair. Now, when you want to just say two of something, where it's not like two camps, right? All right? Or two tables, shulchanot, right? It takes the feminine tense, shulchanot. So, normally the word camp in plural, two camps would be machanot, or it doesn't have to be two, it could be two or more, machanot. That's the rule in what's called diktuk, Hebrew grammar. So if you look at this verse, it says Yaakov, verse 2, chapter 32, verse 2, Yaakov went on his way, and he approached, he saw angels of God. And Yaakov said, when he saw this camp of, this godly camp, he said, you know, therefore I'm going to call this name of this place Machanayim. It should be Machanot. He called it Machanayim. And This is a Ramban. Nachmani says, because what happened here is an angels, this heavenly angels came down and they were looking for a place where the divine presence could rest. And Yaakov, in turn, his camp was looking for a place to make the divine presence rest. They were a perfect pair. The heavenly angel camp and the earthly camp of Yaakov, his family, were machanayim, like enayim, raglayim. They were a perfect pair. The godly camp and the earthly camp. Going right back to the beginning of the parsha, the ladder, mutzav arza, on the ground, but its head goes into the heavens. The head of the ladder goes into the heavens. We have the ability, our mundane, we're created, Adam, from Adama, from the ground. The other meaning of the word Adam is Adameh Kelyon. I will be God, like God. I will emulate to be God, to emulate his attributes. That's this ladder going up and down. Okay. Question. Over and over again, we keep hearing about this idea that that the nations, it's told to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that the nations of the, all the nations of the world, we bless through you. When Yaakov comes, the well overflows. The well literally overflows for Laban, and it stays overflowing throughout his whole stay there. In fact, that's one of the ways he suspected Yaakov ran away, because the well stopped overflowing. And Or Chaim goes into detail about this. You see this also when Yaakov goes to Mitzrayim. The famine stopped for his sake. The nations were blessed. And the Nile started overflowing. And when he died, the famine resumed. And you see by Yosef that wherever he was, everybody was blessed because of him. So this is part of the idea. The Jew, wherever he is, that economy of that nation is blessed through us. Spain, Germany, all these places, until they started doing stupid things with us, and then they, you know, went and dreared, and they never recovered. Yep. Okay. Now, this is a very famous Rashi. Did I insult anybody yet?
You're in a family, I think.
We got a few minutes. We could do it. Okay. We have a famous Rashi here, by Yetzei Yaakov, very beginning of Parsha again. It says Yaakov went out, and it says, it should say by Yelech Yaakov, says Rashi, Yaakov went, but it says he went out. What does it mean he went out? Magid, it comes to teach us, sheyitziyas tzadik min hamakom, when a tzadik, a righteous person, leaves a place, oyseh roshem, it makes a impact. Shebizman shal tzadik beir, when the tzadik's in the city has a splendor, it has honor, it has so forth and so on, and when the tzadik leaves, gone is the city's splendor, gone is the city's honor. So the question that's asked on this is, why aren't we told this when Avram left Israel? Or when Yitzchak went down to Philistine land? Why do we learn out with Yaakov? Don't you want to know why? You're a cheater. Okay. I'll pee, Rob, my friend. It says the following. It's a very, very important part. And he says the following. You know, Avram, you could understand. It's not such a novel idea that when Avram left, the glory of the town left. Why? Because Avram was very wealthy, and he did a tremendous amount of outreach, hospitality. So when he left, everybody missed him. You know, he was always taking in everybody. Same thing with Yitzchak. But if you think about it, up until this point, what is Yaakov described as? Ish tam yeshev oylim. He's just dwelling in the tent, learning Torah. That's all he's doing, right? Just learning Torah. It's not necessarily doing outreach, not doing chesed, which are very important, right? So the reason it's mentioned here is to teach you just that. Even if the tzaddik doesn't do outreach and chesed, just the very koyach of Torah, the power of just sitting and learning Torah in your ivory tower. I mean, it's all necessary, don't get me wrong. But just the power of learning Torah has an effect on the city. And when that tzaddik who just sat there learning Torah, didn't necessarily do chesed, you know, did outreach, leaves, it leaves an impact. It's not the same place anymore. Right? So, our friend was talking about Baltimore, but you can extrapolate and use it for Atlanta. You have to realize, you have to machshav the Torah, the kolel, they happen to combine both. But even if they did it, just the fact they're sitting and learning Torah, you know, that makes this a different place. That makes Atlanta, Georgia a different place, and it affects everybody, even the non-Jewish world in this town. It affects everything, the power of learning Torah. We forget about that because we, you know, you don't see the tangible results. But the fact is, Torah has a tremendous impact. Therefore, by Yaakov, the one who didn't do outreach, who just sat there and learning Torah up to this point, when he left, you should know, it's not the same place. It made an impact. Gone is the city's splendor. The Torah left that town. It ain't the same. Questions? You have this theme over and over again. We had it last week with Yitzchak getting wealthy and the Goyim getting jealous, the wealthy Jew. Here too, Lavan, the wealth. You got it from me. Memenu, from me you got the wealth. Okay? And this is repeated over and over again in our exile. It's interesting. Lost my train of thought. If something's interesting, believe me, I'll find what it is. I was going to tell you it's interesting. It's very, I don't know, you know, this again, all little talk here. It seems like every parsha, including this one, there's a lech lecha. If you think about it. Bereshis, you know, parsha's Bereshis, that's the lech lecha. Adam gets kicked out of Gan Eden, right? Noah, lech lecha. Noah, get out of the ark, right? Lech lecha, Abram leaves, cuts off new paths. Vayera, you know, lech lecha of Yitzchak after the Akedah, right? New entity. Chayasara, the lech lecha of Rivka, right? She cuts off her paths, right? Completely. Doesn't lech lecha of Yitzchak in last week's, in Toldos, the lech lecha of Yaakov, right? And here we have the lech lecha of Rachel Leah in our Torah portion. Right? Yaakov comes up to him and says, you know, your father's done such and such. Are you willing to, you know, leave? And he says, yeah, absolutely. And then where they cut off completely their path. So this is the lech lecha of Rachel and Leah. Okay, questions. You probably weren't here, but we did that on the Parsha of Lecha. You're 100% right. Our whole life is a lech lecha. We leave our heavenly sphere there where our souls are at peace. We come down here and, you know, and continuously in life, we're doing a lech lecha. We're trying to cut off the vile influences of the environment and the current culture, right? So every one of us, and we mentioned this in detail, there comes some time in a person's life, a pivotal point, where you have to make a definite cutoff of your past. A lech lecha. And everybody in this room, you know, trying to get close to Yiddishkeit, I'm sure has encountered at least one lech lecha in their life. Another question. This is Rivka, Rachel, Leah. This is discussed to their credit that despite, with Rivka, it's mentioned specifically why it says that she was this daughter and the sister of Laban and Betuel, to say that she, you know, despite those wicked people, they became righteous. And by the way, Rivka gives the power. It's an amazing thing because she was brought up in this terrible environment and she didn't assimilate their ideas, their wickedness in her. She's also a Masi Avos Simla Bonim, given the power for Jews to remain unaffected by their evil environment. So it, what you're saying is to their praise, that despite that...
Well, they were in it, and yet they were...
Right. Avram with Terach, Rivka with, you know, Lavan and Rachel and... All of them. That's their greatness, right? Yaakov has a funny prayer here. He says, Hashem just promised him, I'm going to give you all this, the whole land of Israel. I'm going to watch over you. And Yaakov says, God, if you give me bread to eat and clothes to wear, you know, then you'll be to me like Elohim. So, a number of questions here. First of all, what else do you do with bread and clothes? That would seem redundant. What does it mean, bread to eat and clothes to wear? So, on one hand, he knew he was going to Laban. So, one answer is, bread that I can eat, that I acquired honestly, and clothes that I can wear, that I acquired. So that's the Breuer's answer. But another insight would be that I'm about to go into a foreign environment. I'm leaving Israel for the first time. And the tendency, and you know, if I'm blessed with wealth, which he was, is to say that my power, my strength got me this. Let me always remember, said Yaakov, that the bread that I eat and the clothes I wear is from you. That was the statement. I should never forget in my wealth and what's going on now in this environment outside of Israel and the exile that if I do prosper, it's all from you. The bread, the clothes, everything is from you. Okay. It says that Leah was hated. I'm like preempting questions that usually come up. This is one, another one of those verses that people go nuts over. If you look at the way the Hebrew is worded, Vayar Hashem, Hisnua Leah. Hashem saw that Leah was hated. Leah for sure didn't know that she was loved any less. And by the way, that's what hated means. In comparison to the love for Rachel, it looked like she was hated. But for sure that she did not notice it. Only God noticed it. That's why it says, but yeah, only God could see that she was hated compared to Rachel. And therefore, he opened up her womb. But another play on words. In the prophet, the word snua, snasi, is like a code word for Esau. God says, Yaakov, I love, that's Esau Sineti, and Esau I hated. So when it says, Vayar Hashem ki sunua Leah, Hashem saw that the sunua, the hated one, Esau, was going to be destined for Leah, especially if she remains barren. Then everybody will say, says the Or HaChaim, you see, she's really not the destined mate of Yaakov. She's barren. She really belongs to Esau. Therefore, God opened up her womb. And the same thing with Rachel. It says, God has removed my reproach, cherpasi, because as long as Rachel remained barren, there was a chance she was feared, you know, maybe she'd also get divorced and end up in the hands of Esau. Okay, and this continues, by the way. We're going to see this continues with Dina. This whole theory. Okay. Yeah. Yaakov institutes the evening prayer of Maariv. We said Avram, the first Jew, the dawn of Israel, institutes Shacharis, right? Very, very significant that Shacharis, the early part of the day, you know, a person gets up, it's sunny, there's hope, there's a bright future, you don't have any problems yet, worries or anxiety, you know, you got the whole day ahead of you, right? It's a bright future. That was Avraham. That's why he instituted Shacharis, right? Avram was considered Nasi Elohim. He was respected by everybody, right? The Prince of God. People came from all over the world to debate with him. Kings, Abimelech, Paro. Everybody respected Avram. I mean, he had problems in his life, okay? So that's Shacharis. We're Yaakov. We're the Jew in exile. Our brother's trying to kill us, right? We're fleeing, right, from him, going to Laban. We have to deal with deception and trickery, right? The daughter's raped, Dina, right? Yosef, his favorite son, he thinks is dead, right? His wife dies in childbirth on him. His whole life is beset with Tzoras. So that's Maariv, darkness. It's dark out. You can't see. The Golus, the exile. So metaphorically, this symbolizes also in our individual lives when we have prosperity and we have poverty, we have to turn to God, right? And we have a halacha that during the night we always mention the midah of the day. And during day we mention the night. We say in the Maariv service, Golo or mifnei choshech, but choshech mifnei or. God removes the light for darkness and darkness for light. Which means when things are light for us and we're prospering, don't let it go to your head. Right? And when things are look black out there, right? Remember, there's going to be a light at the end of the tunnel. This is represented. He comes to a place that's desolate, Yaakov does. That's the future site of the base of Migdash. Now it's desolate. It's dark. It's wilderness. It's a midbar, right? It looks hopeless, right? Yaakov institutes the prayer service, Maariv, then, fleeing from his brother, on the way to Laban, in a desolate place. In the future, it's going to be bright. That's going to be the base of Migdash. Okay? So for us, that they say that's the most important. In a certain sense, it could be the most important prayer. It's the hardest prayer in the sense of what it symbolizes when you're confused and you don't see God's hand clearly, right? Exile and darkness, and you still turn and you still pray to God. And it says, you know, the Shema ends differently in the morning and the evening. In the evening ends Emes ve'emuna, truth and faith. That's what you need at night. You need the faith to ride through the darkness of your personal things that we're going through, and as a nation of Israel as a whole. Okay? One more thing. The kuntz of Leah. You know, we said that she named that child Yehuda, and we're named Yehudim, right? Because she said, I received more than my share. So, Rav Friend, I think he brings this out. He says, really, if you think about it, the why didn't Leah say, no, why should I say I'm getting more than my share of my fourth son? Maybe I'm supposed to get 8 kids, 9 kids, and each one of them gets one. So, you know, like when we out, you know, by us, anything that we get, we say, yeah, we deserve it. We had it coming to us. You know, that's our attitude. And if we don't get it, we say it's not fair. So Leah's greatness was she stepped out of it and she said, look, objectively, you know, everybody should get 3. I am getting more than I deserve. That's not something we're used to saying. I don't know if any of us ever said that I'm getting more than I deserve. Okay? So that's the idea. The outlook that I'm getting more than I deserve, that's the outlook a Jew's supposed to have. That's why he's named Yehuda. That's why we're named Yehudim. Okay, I guess I'm going to bid you all a good one. Yes. Yaakov represents truth. We're B'nai Yisrael. We're the children of Yaakov. And we try to, that guidepost of truth through all the falsehood of the world. That's a very nice insight. I just found something. It says this, Kol asher t'ten li aser asreinu. Everything you give me, I'm going to miser. I'm going to give a tithe, a tenth to. We see this with all the patriarchs. Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, they all did tithing. But, yeah, okay. Hold on a second. They all did tithing. Now, the truth is, not just your money. It's brought out, Rav Shimon Shkoff brings out that a person should tithe his skills and his talents to tzedakah. In other words, volunteering your time with others, right? Not necessarily even in learning Torah. There is an idea that you should always learn with somebody who's not on your level. Tithe your time for people less fortunate. But doing acts of chesed, visiting the hospitals, with all these other things of chesed, tithing your time. And it says that will increase that will give a blessing to your skills and talents in those areas. Wherever you volunteer your time, right, and helping others, you yourself will be blessed in that area. I say that with money, that tithe you give causes a blessing to rest on the other 90% of the money. Okay? Okie dokie. That's it, guys. Have a wonderful Shabbos. And everybody's welcome to stay after if you have any questions I didn't get to answer. Diane, now Rizal, he says, Yaakov went back after the small jars. She should know everything that's given to a person from heaven, yesh lo eiza shaychus lezeh. A person has an intrinsic connection to it. V'lachen yesh li yizayar lo lekalka v'lo aved es ha-devar. Therefore, a person should be careful not to ruin anything he owns or to lose it. Or just, you know, dismiss it. I'll get another one. Right? So, like, there's a special connection of possessions to their owner. The Gemara says there's 3 chains, 3 special chains, charms. Chain isha albaila, a lady may not be so great looking or whatever, but she has a special chain in her husband's eyes. Chain ir al yoishvav, a person has an intrinsic connection to the city he lives in. It could be, you know, Biloxi, Mississippi, but he likes it. He has an intrinsic connection. And the other is, Kinyona Valkaino, I think is the words, a person's possessions, an intrinsic connection to them. A person likes it, you know, like, you know, my dog wouldn't wear this tie. I wouldn't have a dog, right? But, you know, I like it.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.